the volume.
Oral Sessions is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hey guys, welcome to Oral Sessions with me, Renee Paquette. We have, quite possibly, quite literally, our very biggest guest to date. Yes, we have on the one, the only, Paul White. I got to sit down with him. Of course, you know, you may be familiar with the name The Big Show. He's been around the wrestling community and in the wrestling world for forever, wrestling with WWE for 20 plus years, and just recently made the jump over to All Elite Wrestling. This rocked the wrestling world. This rocked my world. To know The Big Show, somebody who I just figured was going to wind down his career with WWE, but to know that this man has so much more left in his tank, so much more that he wants to offer back to the wrestling community. He signed to AEW, and he's going to be an in-ring performer on occasion, but on top of that, providing his voice, his brains, his insight on the commentary side. So he's going to be on AEW Dark Elevation. That is on AEW's YouTube channel. That begins Monday, March 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So Mondays, you guys can catch this man, hear his voice, see this guy on TV. But this was just such a great chat with an old friend, getting to just see what he's up to, what was going through his mind to make this leap into AEW. I can't wait to see what he's going to do. I mean, we just talk about his career, the things that he's been able to achieve just in wrestling in general, to some of the acting that he's gotten into. We also talk about the insane hip surgery that he had, followed up by a multitude of different errors that went wrong with that, which I think was one of those things that really fired him up to be like, no, I still want to be in the ring. I still want to be around. I don't want to just sit around and collect a paycheck. I want to work. And that's the work ethic of Paul White. So I was so happy to be able to sit down with this guy. He's such a good dude, such a great storyteller. I mean, you can sit and talk to this guy for forever. He's the best. All right. So that interview is coming up. But before we get to that, I got to give a quick little bit of love here to today's sponsor for the show, which is Magic Spoon. Oh my God. We're talking cereal, baby. So growing up, cereal was, you know, one of the best parts about being a kid. But over time, you realize I've got to give it up because you realize it's full of sugar and junk that you really should not be eating. You know, whether you're trying to cut out carbs, sugar, unhealthy food, and then you hit the harsh reality that you basically can't eat anything anymore. You know, whether you're drinking protein shakes or powder for years, now you find a delicious and I would say fun way to get your protein before and after workouts. This is like a great little pick-me-up. Everyone's always trying to eat better, make healthy choices, having a healthy breakfast, but you know, it doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors that you love, but without all of the bad crap. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, and only 140 calories per serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. And we've got some pretty exciting news here. Magic Spoon's going to be releasing 2 amazing new flavors this month for a limited time only. Are you ready for this? Hold on to your butts. We are talking cookies and cream and maple waffle. What? Come on. And if that isn't the most comforting, indulgent combination, then I don't know what to tell you. This is the ultimate treat your damn self combo. So make sure you get some while you can because they're only available for a limited time. Or you can build your own box. The available flavors to build your very own custom bundle are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, and cinnamon. I love anything cinnamon flavored. Hook it up. So also, if you're listening from Canada, shout out to my people. But Magic Spoon is now shipping there as well. So jump on the bandwagon, y'all. One of my favorite things to do is mixing the cocoa with the peanut butter because it tastes just like a peanut butter cup. And it's amazing. And again, I just talked about the cinnamon too. That calls me up on the phone. I love that stuff. It's so, so good. Okay, so go to magicspoon.com/Renee to grab the new limited edition cookies and cream maple waffle or a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code Renee at the checkout to save $5 off your order. So this offer is good now for anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Yes, you are welcome, Canada. You can get in on that, but only when you use our code at the checkout. So make sure that you use the code Renee at the checkout. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product that is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they're going to refund you your money. No questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/Renee. Use the code Renee, R-E-N-E-E, to save $5 off. And thank you to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode. All right, guys, without further ado, it is time. Ready? Well, it's Paul White. I don't know if we can still use that, but you guys know what that means. You hear that music and you know that we're talking about the big show, Paul White, now a part of All Elite Wrestling. Here's the interview. You guys are going to love him even more than you already have.
Finally, here we are. Oral Sessions. Paul White is joining me. We get to do this together.
I know. This is
in the
great.
Same room.
I know. It's like serendipity.
It is. We've been COVID tested. Everybody relax. We've done all the things. I've got my little wristbands to prove it.
Yeah, I'm like 0-31 in COVID tests.
Are you?
I'm doing good.
I still have antibodies. Nine months.
Oh.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, nuts. Still thriving. So here we are. We're here at AEW. Who would have thought that we would be sitting here in this situation?
Well,
right?
I mean, if you look at my career, I've had more turns in NASCAR. So this is probably, this is one like, yeah, we all saw that coming.
No, not at all.
I didn't see it coming.
I don't think anyone saw this coming.
No, this was a very quick decision that was made in a matter of 48 hours for me.
So how did that all happen? Like, I mean, because it blew my mind when I heard this. I was like, wait, what? Because you've been with WWE for over 20 years.
Yeah. For me, it was just, I think just creatively, it was just frustration. I've gone back and forth with, with Paul Heyman and Bruce Pritchard and Vince. And I had some medical issues a couple of years ago where I had some problems with the hip real bad. And you know how things are there, that if you kind of get out of the loop a little bit, it's real hard for them to work you back into the loop.
Yeah.
No matter how much talent you have, no matter how much you have to offer. And it was just frustrating to me because, I mean, yeah, sure, I was making money. I worked once against Drew after WrestleMania there. And I did a couple of things. Like, I came in to be partners with Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe. And then, that went out. And it's like, I need more than this guy. I've never been ever a sit-on-the-bench guy. I'm not going to take money and just sit at home and be happy like a little princess. That's not my deal. I like to work for my money. I like to earn it. And I like performing. I think I went 18 years in WWE without missing a single Europe tour.
Wow.
Spring or fall.
That's a lot. And for people that don't understand that, I mean, those trips are grueling.
Yeah.
No matter what, let alone what travel's like for you.
Yeah. But here's the thing, and people said that show, how do you fit on this plane? How do you do that? And it was like, I just had to do what I had to do. I had two choices. I could go to work or I could not, and it's just all an attitude, and I love doing what I'm doing. I think that was the biggest thing that was a letdown for me, was not being able to get something going creatively, because and I've known, Vince for a long time, and he gets focused and he gets blinders on and he's, doing what he's doing. It's real hard to be that squeaky wheel that gets the grease. And
especially if you're not at TVs.
And you're just sitting there and nobody is, like, hey, Paul White's still alive. Paul White's, he's clear. He can work. He can work. And it just got frustrating to the point of, I just got frustrated with trying to knock on the door. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to use me for other things. They wanted me to do, the community relations thing, which is stuff I love to do anyway. Yeah. But they were trying to do me a favor, I think, and, put me out in shady pines. And, I don't want to be in shady pines. I tried to tell them, look, don't put me in shady pines. And, so I had an opportunity to do something else and I took it. And here's the thing, I've talked to Vince, I've talked to Kevin Dunn, nobody's mad, nobody's upset.
That's good.
It's not an anger thing. Like, the day I saw you, Vince called me and wished me all luck and then said, I'm going to be a big asset for AEW and have a good time and all that. I mean, I've done a lot of things with him. So for me to turn around and try to bury WWE, it's not about that. It's just business,
And the fact that the way the business is now, the fact that this opportunity is a thing that's available is like, oh my God.
It's unbelievable. I get to work with younger talent. I get to work in an environment where I can really, really contribute.
Yeah.
I can do color commentating, which has always been, we've talked about this
yeah.
for years. This is like, you know, this is, I'm excited about it. I hope I don't, you know, screw the pooch on this one.
No, you'll be great.
I hope so. You'll be great. You know, otherwise it's just like, I'm just going to like, you know, put a bag over my head and never show my face again.
Trust me, I tried to do that for a while. It didn't fucking work. It didn't work.
But, you know, and then I'm going to hopefully get the opportunity to work with some of these guys. You know, there's a lot of younger talent here that are bigger guys that I can really help and bring them along and find out who they are, you know, and I can still perform in front of the fans. I mean, there's, when you have more to contribute and you have more in the tank to give, you want to give it. Well, I know this is going to come to an end someday. I know it will. Well, for a while, yeah.
Not for a while. And now it's on your own terms.
It's on my own terms.
You're in the driver's seat. You're not knocking on someone's door waiting for someone to respond to an email or tell you where you can be. Like,
yeah,
you're totally.
It is. And if you have any idea how unreal that feels?
Yeah, I do.
I like it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, even a simple fact where I called Revolution the other night, I called it Evolution, you know. There's Elevation, the new show that I'm doing.
I will say the names get a little.
Yeah, you know, like there's a lot of tongue twisters going in there, yeah. You know. But nobody jumped my ass. No, you know, I didn't have somebody. What are you stupid? You
God know? Damn it!
Show Jesus, you don't know the name of the goddamn pay per view.
You ruined
know?
It. Now no one's gonna buy it.
No one's gonna buy it. It's your fault. You know, like
we've been there.
You know, but you know, again, you know, you're working for a guy who's a perfectionist, yeah. Who holds himself to a higher standard and holds everyone else around him to that standard, yes. You know, and that's,
it can be hard to work under those situations.
It can be hard to work under those situations because even if you have, you know, my favorite line with Vince is I'll take it under advisement, which means shut the fuck up. Yeah. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Yeah. Which is, you know, I'll take it under advisement. Well, that's the end of that.
Yeah,
you know,
period.
That's okay. The end of that. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to get knocked out by the mechanical bull. Okay, yeah. Here we go. But, you know, but at the same time, I learned so much from working there and how to do things and how to be an entertainer and psychology and all that stuff, that these are tools that I can help younger guys with. Not necessarily that style of philosophy because, you know, the environment over there is created to be a very competitive Shark Tank environment.
Yeah.
It's done that way by design because the guy at the top is a fighter, you know, sure, and that's what he does. He wants confrontation. He wants people thinking about the product as much as he is. Yeah, it is. And he wants all the dogs running to his pack are all the same way. They're snarling for every scrap. You know? You got to be afraid to step on toes. You know what I mean? And that's a great environment, but at the same time, sometimes it isn't conducive for being as creative as you want to be, you know, because when that one person has a vision, that's the vision that's mandated and followed. Whether, you know, you have a different insight, even if it's not about yourself, but about a different talent, so you want to help them. And I think myself, because I've had the unique opportunity in my career the last 4 decades.
Oh my God, isn't that crazy to say?
Yeah, it is, because I still remember being like long haired and green as
you
grass.
Had a great head of hair.
I did.
It was really beautiful.
I was like,
you're so handsome.
No, but back then I was like a 7-foot Jason Momoa, and now it's kind of like GQ Shrek, maybe.
You kind of like steal the spotlight in a room anywhere you go.
Well, I'm bigger than the sun, so I can't help but steal it.
Like, that helps.
It helps. You know, when the shadow looms, like, oh, there he is. So, but, you know, that's what I'm excited about this opportunity. It's all the people I've worked with, from Savage to Hogan, Jim Duggan, Sting, Flair, Arn Anderson, John Cena, Batista, Randy, Hunter, Kane, Taker. You know, I was thinking the other day, when you think about, you know, and I was just talking with Tony, I probably have more 3-way matches than anybody here in this company.
Yeah.
I probably have more cage matches than anyone here in this company.
That's a very valid point.
You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that I have done, tag teams and stuff, like, because I've been around for a little bit. All that knowledge and experience I want to give I want to give to the younger talent. I want to make them embrace themselves, because it sucks to be green, to be in a business where you're getting, basically you're making more money than you ever imagined making in your life, and not being confident in who you are as a talent because you're not sure who you are yet.
And to be catapulted on TV, and mm-hmm. it is different, where in WWE, there might be more of that micromanaging, and some people thrive under that and some people crumble under that.
Yeah.
But this is a different situation. You get to go out there and really find your own footing.
And you can really find out who you are and what you're made of. At the same time, that's where I can come in and help guys from taking shortcuts, mm-hmm. from taking, you know, pay attention to
working the cameras,
pay attention to what I call it the cutoff spot of the night is. Because you'll see sometimes watching matches, you'll see three or four of the same cutoff spots every night. Between the top turnbuckle and the second turnbuckle, shoulder into the ring post.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's done tonight already. Maybe change it in your mats or something different. You know, those kind of things I can help people. I think I have a good insight and a gift also for explaining psychology so that people can understand it, because it was hard for me to understand as a giant, as a big guy, like, oh, be strong. Okay, well, what the fuck does that mean exactly? No sell, do sell.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you register? How do you get a guy that's 7 foot tall work against a guy like Rey Mysterio and mm-hmm. tell a story that everyone wants to see and walks away going, wow, that was a hell of a match. It takes time and understanding of who you are and what to do, and the ability to change. Because sometimes guys plan things out in the back. They'll plan A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. And that particular crowd might not be into it.
Yeah.
So you got to shift gears, because you work different in England than you do in California, than you do in Georgia, than you do in Boston.
Sure.
You know? So I've had enough years that comes into play. And that's some of the growing pains I'd love to be able to save some of the AEW talent here from going.
Who are some of the people that you want to help? You've got your eye on things.
Well, personally, my personal dream match so far right here that I salivate every time I see him is Darby Allin.
Oh, isn't he so good?
I want to be a heel and work with him so bad. He knows how to sell, to have that, you won't break me no matter what you do.
It's like a Jeff Hardy a little bit.
Yeah. A lot like Jeff Hardy, where it's that intrinsic value that not a lot of people have that he has. So I salivate looking at Darby. And then I look at, you know, for big guys, you know, Luchasaurus, there's a lot of stuff I can do with him and help him and Wardlow and even work with, like, Brian Cage and Kenny Omega, obviously. Kenny Omega and I think can tear the house down.
Oh, my God.
Adam Page.
Lance Archer, that's a big boy.
You know, Lance is thinking about, you know, Lance and I have known for a long time, and Lance has been, you know, he's gone down the road and done his thing too, but like Lance and I could have a lot of fun, because Lance is a very vicious, aggressive individual. So as a heel, you know, I could do some stuff with him as a baby face, and I think we could tell a story and get that over pretty good.
So you're here doing commentary, but also going to be stepping in the ring.
I'll be stepping into the ring. My main thing right now is, when I talked to Tony about this, I didn't want to come in, and him and I both agreed, like, plop in right out of the gate, new gear, roll in, get in the middle of a title hunt. Because, you know, Kenny and Mox and everybody, they've all built this angle and got to this point where there's nothing worse than having some asshole jump in the middle of your angle in your program.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my thing now is, and plus for me, to do the best services I think that I can for everybody here, so I'm going to come in, do the commenting because it's a passion, also evaluate, watch the talent, get to know the talent, because in WWE, I was constantly absorbed in it all the time. Mm-hmm. So I knew what people were doing, I knew how they were doing, I knew what they were thinking, so it was an easy transition. This is brand new for me. I'm the new kid in school, so to speak. I'm the new kid that's flunked 8th grade like 45 times and still there. But I'm the new kid in school. So for me, this gives me a great opportunity to really study and learn the talent around me, and then find the right program to start with.
Are we going to get
to
the tag team of you and Marco Stone?
Marco Stone.
I mean, it's a dream, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that me being a heel working Marco Stone is also a dream too.
Oh my God.
You know. I'm sure. I would probably get a call from Child Social Services.
Someone will be knocking on your
somebody
door.
I saw what you did to that child. You know, we're gonna hang you from a big tree. you big galoot.
So on the commentary side, I mean, right. that is a whole other thing to be delving into.
Right.
Have you been listening to certain things? Have you been talking to certain people? What's like going through your mind?
Well, right? Going through my mind is trying to get, like, I go back to my commentary people that are my favorites were always, like, to me, was Gordon Solie. And then when I look at professional wrestlers that did commentary, Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse the Body Ventura, even Bobby the Brain Heenan. I mean, Bobby the Brain Heenan, I mean, he was just, I'm not even the same zip code as Bobby the Brain Heenan, because he was just so amazing. All those guys found that way to tell a story about the talent in the ring and get the talent in the ring over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's a fine line. That's the thing that I think that I'm gonna push myself towards is it's not a AEW dark elevation is not an opportunity for me to sit back on a microphone and talk about myself for an hour. Right. Because, you know, quite frankly, that's an asshole move. You know, you want to give your focus and attention to the guys in the ring that are getting over and help them and that's something that I think I can add with experience, add some validity to the talent.
And that just comes back to the psychology that we're talking about earlier too,
right.
where like, yeah, because you, unless it's leading to an angle, you just putting yourself over, trying to get yourself.
Sucks.
It only goes so far without being like, all right, someone's got a fight show now.
Somebody unplug his microphone for Christ's sake. I remember I was having fun with Vince let me do a little bit of commentating here and there, but he knew in the back of my mind, that's what Kevin Dunn knew, Michael Cole knew, Jerry Lawler, they all knew, like, that's what I wanted to do.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been a huge, huge passion of mine. Yeah, I would probably say the last, I don't know, 15 years.
Wow.
It's like, when I envision my mind, where does my career end up? My career ends up with me doing color commentating full-time, like Gorilla Monsoon or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but because...
So was it you that pitched in commentary to Tony then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That was one, because when we were talking on the phone, like, Tony was like, okay, well, what do you want to do? You know,
mm-hmm.
I said, well, I want to do color commentating, and I also want to wrestle. If you want to wrestle too? I said, absolutely.
That's so, good. Yeah, ready to go.
Oh, yeah. I got 3.5 pounds of titanium, baby. I'm a 7-foot Wolverine. But, you know, and I've known Tony for a while. And I think he was a little surprised because, you know, I hit him up and I came up to Jacksonville after my WWE contract expired. I made sure everything was legal there, got all my ducks in a row.
Yeah.
And then I came up with him and I had a talk in the office when, like, no one was here. You know, I think it was like 10 o'clock at night, like, when we were up here.
Clandestine meetings.
You know, the only thing he needed was a big briefcase of cash. And we talked about it, and I talked about what my passions were for the industry, my passions about psychology, getting talent over, working with talent, and the potential that the AEW has. And that's the thing, you don't want, and I don't care if this pisses people off or not, but I'm going to say it. You need competition that's not in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
You need another brand where if someone doesn't find out who they are on one brand, there's still another company where they can reinvent themselves and try again.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the problem with when WWE was the only game in town. Sure, you had all the talent. Sure, you had this great plethora of talent to work with. And I think that's one of the problems that WWE has now. It's because they had so much talent that they can't really maximize on all that talent.
Even when you think of all the hours of television that WWE has, there's only so many people that get that TV time. And like you said, it's like you've been there for 20 plus years, but you're out of the loop for a little bit and not on TV. Like I went through the same thing where I was like off doing backstage and I came back. I'm like, hey, how do, like, I'd be messaging Bruce Pritchard. I'd be messaging whoever's been like, use me for this, use me for that. Then I'm like, how, like, once you're out of there, it's hard to like really ingratiate yourself back.
It is tough to get back, especially when, you know, they think that they're, you know, doing you a favor.
Right.
You know what I mean? They thought they were doing me a favor by, you know, sure, I had all that tenure, and, you know, and they did.
He's not been properly utilized in quite some time.
I've never been a guy, honestly, Renee, I never gave a shit about what I did yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't care about titles I've won. I don't care about great matches. I don't care about bad matches. I don't, because what happened yesterday is already gone. I can't change it.
Sure.
I'm about today and tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
And that's my big thing. I could have sat in WWE and sat on my ass and, you know, first round Hall of Fame, all that other shit, which is still important because I worked there a long time. It's important to the relationship that I built there with the fans and that company, but I'm not done yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing, like, for me personally, like when I was doing that angle with Braun, I had, and I'll send you a picture of it later so you can put it on your thing.
Thank you.
I had holes in my ball joint on my hip.
You've showed me this.
It's, you know, the picture crazy. I'm talking about. And I worked a year and a half like that because I felt a duty to the guys in the locker room to be there for them, to keep the angles going. Mm-hmm. Like even I did the thing with the bar. I came to the bar that night that I knocked Cesaro out and the bar broke up because I didn't want to leave those guys hanging.
Yeah.
But the metal device that was in my hip was broken. You know, like I had surgery the next day, but I still came to Minneapolis because I didn't want to let Sheamus and Cesaro down and just like, oh, things will disappear.
Did you know when it broke? Did you feel it?
Yeah, I felt it.
The next time you're watching basketball, I've got the perfect way for you to get in on the action for free. I'm talking about NBA InPlay. It's absolutely free to play on the FanDuel app and features all the fun of live betting. NBA InPlay turns every quarter of every game into a free contest where you can win real cash prizes. So while you're watching the game, all you have to do is predict the outcome of plays and game props before they happen to claim your share of the prize pool. Best of all, a new contest starts every quarter of every game, giving you even more ways to win. FanDuel is the exclusive home for NBA InPlay, so the action's always available right at your fingertips on the FanDuel app. The app is so easy to use, and it takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. And it doesn't matter where you live or where you're traveling to, because NBA InPlay is available in every state. Don't miss your shot. Get in the game and download the FanDuel app to start playing NBA InPlay today.
We need to talk about the hip, because this is a fucking crazy story.
Yeah.
Because you had surgery, and then you got what, MRSA or staph?
No, well, it's hard to say. I mean, I got what they call sensitive staph, so the first surgery I had was called what they call a resurfacing.
Was a hip replacement?
No, this was the first one was a resurfacing.
It's
a titanium cap over the ball joint with a titanium receptacle in the hip. You keep 98% of your bone.
Right.
So they just shave the bone, put a cap over it, put one up in the pelvis, and big joint, you're rocking and rolling. 18 days after surgery, I walked a mile and a half on a treadmill.
Oh.
Right? So, and I beat Vince and Taker by 3 days. Because they had the same surgery.
Yeah.
You know, Vince is like, well, did you walk out the day of surgery? No, they didn't let me walk out. Yeah. I wasn't a billionaire that went back to my luxury apartment. I had to go back to Florida, so they kept me a couple of days. But so I beat them on that. And then on day 21 or 22, I had to go for my fault, and I had a little red bump. Just weird. Just came out of nowhere. And the doctor in New York thought it might have been a stitch. He tried to aspirate it or drain it. That didn't work. And meanwhile, I knew nothing about infections. I hadn't dealt with any of this stuff before. And then it kept getting worse. And then I had all this pain. And so then come to find out, you know, well, we've got an infection. So what are the odds? There's a 33% chance they could open me up again, flush it out, clean out the infection, cover it with vancomycin, antibiotic powder, sew you back up, and you go through rehab and therapy again. So we took the 33% chance because there's a 2% chance of me getting this infection. So I figured 33%, sure, I'll be good.
Now,
meanwhile, this is, now I'm 10 weeks out of WWE with all this fiasco and chaos. So I do the surgery, do the clean out, all that. I start doing good. Rehab's doing good. I think I'm coming back. I take one flight to do something for Special Olympics. My whole leg blows up, turns purple. The infection came back. So then, we're going to have to put you on a PICC line, which is they put a line in through my arm that goes to my heart, and I have an IV bag, and I had 3 IV bags of vancomycin dripping, which takes about 2.5 hours to drip one bag at 3 times a day. It's like having a newborn baby, which you'll find out.
There's
no sleeping 8 hours. You're doing a vancomycin bag in the middle of the night. You get 4 or 5 hours sleep, and then you gotta get another one, then there's a drip time. It was like that for 10 weeks, you know. And
he must have been exhausted.
all those totally off. And the thing is just before I had this hip surgery, I was in the best shape I'd ever been in.
Right. Yeah, you had fucking abs and shit.
Yeah, I did.
What the hell?
Yeah. Well, and so I was on this motivation. They're a little fluffy right now, but by the time I come back to wrestle, they'll be
all right.
I got too skinny. I got down to like 369. I was all head and feet for a while because I was biking 20 miles a day. So I got too skinny there for a while. I was like, you know, I need to go try out for the Lakers or something. I was too skinny. So
talk to Shaq later.
Yeah, right. And so we did the PICC line. We did another surgery, all that. That's my third debridement. So I ended up having three of those where they cut you open. And mine is a bilateral scar. So it goes across the hip.
Come on.
And it goes across the hip. But when it goes across the hip, they cut through all your stabilizer muscles and all that.
Yeah.
So I have to go through all that rehab all over again. So after the third debridement that didn't work, and here's the thing that I found out later that I didn't know. The infection is so smart. It hides in the machine grooves of the metal, and it will build a shield. It's like Captain America hides down with a little shield. And the antibiotic powder lasts like 38, 39 days in your body. The bacteria comes out 42 days.
Oh my God.
So it is so smart that it hides from the antibiotic powder.
Creepy little fucker.
And then works its way back to the top. And then all of a sudden you get this purple thing. And I tried open wound healing it. We did that when we were packing it with this kind of gauze and stuff like that. Like it was, you know. I went through some horrible shit. I did an autograph appearance up in Niagara, and they didn't have a Walgreens in your lovely place of Canada.
Gotta find a Pharma Plus or something. Shoppers Drug Mart.
So I had to actually use a maxi pad and duct tape.
No,
because my leg was bleeding that bad.
Oh my God!
Then I had to fly to California because I had to do a thing in California, and it was the first time I met Joe Mangliano.
Yeah.
And
very handsome,
gorgeous man. I'm at his house, and he's married to Sofia Vergara, and all their furniture is white.
Oh my God!
And there's no way I'm sitting down at this house. I just got there, so I'm just standing in the corner like a real weird giant guy who won't sit down. You know, I went and did a stream thing that I had to do with him, then I flew home. You know, but I had a hole in my leg, big around as my finger. It was just a hole, and it just constantly wept. Then the final surgery was they cut the pieces out. They put in an antibiotic porcelain joint, porcelain covered, another PICC line for 10 weeks.
So 20 weeks of the PICC line.
Yeah, all together, 20 weeks of the PICC line. Jesus. And then they put the new joint in on my birthday 3 months before I started filming the big show.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so, and then we were fine from that. But you
must have felt like it was never going to heal.
Like I had this black cloud over my head. It was ridiculous. But because of all the vancomycin and Cipromax and antibiotics I was taking, it gave me neuropathy, which it burnt all the nerves up from the waist down on my nerves. So, like, you know how your feet
not sit? Like all your nerves, right?
Some of those nerves too.
No.
You know how your feet feel when I fall asleep?
Yeah.
It was like that 24/7. So, like, for the longest time, my foot felt like it was about that big around. So, trying to have my balance and all that stuff, and I had to do therapy and acupuncture and really work hard to get all that back.
So needless to say, you're ready to fucking
go. Yeah, like I you got want, like I was
went through hell.
I went through hell to get back, and then, you know, the match with Drew. But in that, you know, I got the speech 5 years ago that's a pretty bad speech.
What's that?
I got pulled into a talent relations office and got told that I will never main event a WrestleMania again. I will never main event a pay-per-view again, and I will only be used to get over NXT.
That was like said to you.
That was said to my face. Yeah. There's your fucking inspiration. Now go work hard.
Like, what the fuck?
It's
heartbreaking.
Yeah. Vince didn't say that to me.
Yeah. Of course it wasn't.
It wasn't him.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing gets said to you without it, you know.
Of course.
You know where it comes from. So it hurt a little bit. It was like, really, that's where we're at. Because they had to think about the future.
Sure. You
know?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like, okay.
Busting your ass.
Then I went and got in shape. You know, I had the abs and all that shit. And I made a joke about it. He said, when I chain smoked 2 fucking packs of cigarettes a day, drank Jack Daniels like water and weighed 500 pounds, I was a fucking world champion. I got abs. I can't get a fucking match now.
Fuck me. What
the fuck? So, but and again, you know, not making excuses, but I understand where they're coming from on there.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's they were trying to give me the heads up, like, hey, you know, you've done everything that we can do with you. You've had a great career. You know, maybe it's time for you to start thinking about slowing down. Mm-hmm. You know, and fuck that, Jack. You know, yeah. The only thing I say is, Vince said, are you going to slow down, Vince?
Exactly.
Are you going to slow down?
Exactly.
Well, then don't look at me and ask me to slow down.
How I'm dare not going, you?
Yeah, like, buddy. You know, so, I mean, you know, it's everything happens. I know this sounds very cliche, but everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't gone through the stuff that I went through with my hip infection, I wouldn't have had the time to sit down with the people at Netflix to put together the Big Show show to make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay. If I hadn't gone through what I went through, I wouldn't have had the availability and the determination and the courage to walk away when this contract expired.
Yeah. You get fired up. I mean, you had time to sit there and stew.
I had time
and
to process.
You still had fuel in the tank that you wanted.
That I still had things I wanted to do. And it's not about winning championships or accolades. That's not it. It's competing. It's being in that environment. It's being able to help the next generation grow and get better and improve. And, you know, and here's the thing. You know, some of my bullshit advice might not help someone. But, you know what? If it helps one or two people, then... Mm-hmm. Then I've done good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's all in how people take it and how they apply it themselves and how they interpret it. And because this is a beautiful, all the heartaches, the pains, the travels, the politics, the bullshit, all of that. Sure, if you sit back and look at it, it's immense. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I've got lifelong friends. I've got friends that are fans that I've known forever. I've got... Mm-hmm. An incredible. I'm a small town kid from. I'm from a small town, South Carolina. You know, my mom was a cop. My dad was a mechanic.
Yeah.
And I've been everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that in itself is a dream come true story.
It's crazy when you get to like look back and reflect on that stuff too. Like I've been doing that a little bit lately too. I'm like, man, like that's the thing I miss. It's like the friends that you get along the way, and like we really are like family. But now. As you branch, I mean, here you have familiar faces in Jericho and
well, there's so many crew people here that I've known for years too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? There's a lot of people that, like when I came over here, it was like, oh my god, it's like, you know what I mean? Because you get so in the WWE world.
I literally just did the same thing.
I was like, oh, that's
we kind of laid down.
I went like, I'm letting neuropathy's back. I think, where's my leg moving now? You know, you get so involved in that WWE world that you. Nothing really exists outside of it. Because you're so committed to what you're doing. You're home, you're thinking about matches, you're thinking about angles.
You can never come up for air.
You know, you don't come up for air.
Yeah.
And I was a gear in that cog for a solid 18, 19 years.
Yeah.
You know? And then when you have time to step back and look, okay, well, what am I looking for now? And what am I looking for now is I want to have fun.
Yeah.
I want to have fun. I want to have...
This is a place to do it. You get to be in control.
I get it, but you gotta understand. I'm kind of like a beat junkyard dog, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not as talented as BJYD, but I'm saying is, you know, it's a little hard. It's like you know, you're waiting to be corrected or scolded.
It's a weird knee-jerk reaction. Yeah, I mean,
it's weird,
you
right?
get in such an interesting mindset. It is hard to break out of that.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Because I've heard other people say things, and I flinched for them.
Oh,
you
fuck.
You know what I mean? Because they're like, and then you're like, oh, you can do whatever you want. You can say that. That's fine. Go ahead.
It is really wild to see that difference. I mean, even just me seeing it through John and seeing his time here. I mean, I only used to pop out here so often, but... Yeah, seeing people that we've known from, you know, from WWE from along the way and seeing people thriving here the way that they are. It's just cool to see people have another chance, another opportunity to get to do the thing that they love to do in a great environment. So my next question.
Yes, sir.
Are we going to get to see you in Shaq finally? Come on! I mean, since WrestleMania, what, 32? Was it 32 you guys won that battle royale?
I don't know.
I think it was Dallas.
I just airdropped one time so bad because right before we did that angle with Vicky and Cena and I.
Yeah.
I said, hey, man, I'm looking forward to working with you. He goes, show, we had a program like 2 years ago. I'm like, oh, my bad.
All right.
So, you know, I'm chair shots were real in my day. I forget about shit.
Fair.
So, yeah.
Fair.
That's probably why I don't worry about yesterday because I forget it anyway. But you know what? I will say this. I think Shaq did a great job. I think he's a natural showman. He's an incredible athlete. And I think if the stars align, I'll be more than happy to show him how to chop for real.
You have a glimmer in your eye while you're talking about it. Like
I'm old school. I'm not CJ Denal. I probably Fair just enough. Did, but I'm not CJ Denal.
Fair enough. How weird is it for you to be announced as Paul White in a wrestling environment?
Super weird.
Yeah.
Super weird. It's like, plus I found out today, somebody sent me a link that AEW just patented and applied for trademark for Captain Insano.
What?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, so it's funny. Yeah, I might bring back Captain Insano.
Fuck yes!
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, I will totally rip Hulk off any chance of it. Let me tell you something, brother. Captain Insano shows no mercy, dude.
I love that. Oh my god, that's so funny.
You know what's funny is when I did that Waterboy years ago, Hogan actually told me, brother, you should get that gimmick. That gimmick's money. You know, because, you know, he thinks outside of the box, brother, that gimmick's money, brother. Captain Insano, that's money, brother.
That's
you know,
so
I think
funny.
The whole reason he did Mr. America is because he was infatuated with Captain Insano. You know what I mean?
So I was doing research on Wikipedia, which is my main source on people, which I always find funny.
Because it's not really true?
Well, it's not always true.
Yeah.
But it's also just funny.
Like I have like 14 kids or some shit.
Yeah.
I've got like 14 kids or something.
It's okay. Somebody on the internet currently is saying that this is not a real baby, that it's like a fake pregnancy that I'm duping people into. So everybody's taking
Oh, because you're that kind of an attention whore.
Yeah.
You're going to go through wearing a fake pregnancy.
What's the big payoff?
Yeah, what's the payoff in this?
Okay, so when I was doing research, I didn't realize what Danny Bonaduke, do you met Danny Bonaduke?
Yeah.
He introduced you to Hulk Hogan. That was your whole way
that's,
into wrestling. That's
how I got the reps. Here's what I did. I lost my dad, my grandfather, my basketball coach got fired. It was such they all in the same year.
Oh my God.
So for a young man, I got a little lost. And then I did some bounty hunting, bouncing a bar. I was, you know, doing my
bounty.
Yeah, I worked for Bail Bondsman for a while.
Hell yeah.
And,
that's
a whole it's other not that glamorous, believe me. It's not that glamorous. Sure. It's a lot of sitting in the car waiting for some dumbass to come out of his favorite bar. But so I got a job from a friend of mine. He says, hey, there's this guy from Chicago that just bought all this karaoke equipment because Rent-A-Center back in the early 90s was doing karaoke rentals rent to own, but they had like industrial karaoke equipment for like running a DJ business.
Okay.
And it was just a little bit ahead of its time. So this guy in Chicago was buying all the software that he could get, machines. And then he was doing a nationwide thing where he was a distributor of software and equipment. And he also ran about 150 shows over the Chicago area for all the bars. So he had 5 or 10 bars a night. And he was charged to the bars from $1,200 to $1,500 a bar for karaoke and the DJ.
Okay.
So, you know, but anyway, he was there buying the equipment. He bought it for pennies on the dollar. But they needed somebody to load equipment and I could drive a forklift. So one of my amazing talents.
That's like on your special skills.
Yeah, special skills lives. I can drive a dump truck, a backhoe, a running motor, a forklift, and I can weld. So I learned how to do all this by the time I was 14. Right. So like I said, my dad was a mechanic. So anyway, so I went over for a job. It was $75 a day, you know, cats. So then this guy is like a real fast talker. He was exactly like John Travolta in Get Shorty.
Okay.
Like when Get Shorty came out, everybody that knew Jimmy laughed because we thought that John Travolta has met Jimmy somewhere. Because the boots, other than like instead of wearing the dress shoes, Jimmy wore boots, the suit, the turtleneck,
amazing.
The wise guy, that they even look the same, you know, the whole the whole thing. So Jimmy said, so what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. know, I'm kind of lost right now. I said, he says, why don't you come back to Chicago? I know some guys in the Bears. I'll get you a tryout on the Bears. You know, and I'm like, okay, I mean, sure. So I went back to Chicago, and I had everything I owned was in a little laundry basket.
Yeah.
All my clothes, everything I owned. Oh, my God. And my dad's urn and everything I owned was in a laundry basket.
Whoa. You know?
And so I'm with him, and this guy had, like, 10 girlfriends all over Chicago. Like, all my stuff I carried in the trunk because we stayed with a different girl every night. You know, this guy was, like, unreal. I never seen anybody like this.
Dealing and dealing with babes.
I mean, you know, he knew everybody. He knew everybody. He was everybody's friend, and he was a light. Like, this guy could have fun in a prison camp. Like, you go out to, like, the lake houses up there in Michigan or Chicago, you know, and by after being there a day, there'd be 50 people at our fire, and everybody singing where everybody would come. Like, he was just that guy,
yeah.
You know. And so I answered phones during the day, and hello, this is Jesco Karaoke, man. Help you, hardware, software. So I answered phones. And then at night, I went around with Jimmy, and he collected all the money from the bars, because sometimes he'd have, you know, 40, 50 grand cash on him, and I was with him.
Not a bad
deterrent, but he used to make me sing in every bar that we went to.
Oh,
I'd have to do it.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
Funky Cold Medina.
One time, Tone Loc was on a plane behind me, and I was like, fucking Tone Loc?
Right.
Like, that's that voice that you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one thing I could do, because I can't carry a tune in the wheelbarrow. So. Like, the Masked Singer called me. I was like, dude.
Oh, dude, that would have been so cool.
Yeah, it would have been cool.
That would have been good.
No,
damn.
No, it would have been horrible.
Maybe you can do mass dance.
No, I can't dance either. No. There's no Disney movies in my future. I can't sing.
All right, noted.
Everybody loves some. That's it.
I mean, that was pretty good.
Anyway, so moving on. So we're talking one day, and he was doing the morning drive in Chicago with Danny Bonaduce, where Danny Bonaduce would have people come in to the radio station through a lottery drawing. They would sing their song karaoke on the air, and then fans would call in and vote, you know. So it was kind of like same thing on its own. It was weird.
Oh, it's
in the yeah, my fingers can't hit the
yeah, button, mine right, did so. This. Oh, there you go. If by the end you're lying down, it's totally okay.
Yeah, it's really weird. So, so we went in to do the show, and Danny Bonaduce is absolutely super cool, super energy. Him and Jimmy got on great. And Danny's asked what I wanted to do. I said, you know, I said, I've always been a fan. This is exactly where it's at. I said, I've always loved wrestling. I said, maybe I can be one of those guys that get beat up. I said, but just, I'm young. It looks like it would be fun, you know? And he goes, oh, I know Hulk Hogan. I'm doing this thing with Hulk Hogan, Mr. T. You know, you play basketball with your thing. You'll be my ringer. So, okay, it was a Chicago Wolves basketball game halftime. It was Mr. T and Hulk Hogan versus Danny Bonaduce and a secret partner. It was for like a charity thing. So Danny introduced me to Hulk that night. And it was funny because I guess Hulk had saw me earlier in the crowd. He was elbowing Linda. Like, he looks like a young Andre. He looks like you're
yeah.
Like Hogan got moist immediately. You know, and then he found out that, you know, that I was an athlete and I wanted to wrestle. And I did the worst thing you could ever do for a wrestler because I did an impersonation for him.
Yeah.
You know, which luckily for me, it worked out. But if it would have been some guys, it would have been a crash and burn.
You did like an impression of Hulk too, Hulk?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, well, let me tell you something, brother. I've been to the top of a mountain, dude. So what you going to do when Hulkamania runs wild on you, brother? Yeah, you know,
that's really good. That is a great.
That's not bad, right? Well, I was a fan. Hulk, I did that for Hulk, and Hulk's eyes got real big. Now that I know him, in his mind, he was just writing checks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for bank deposits. Like, he had everything mapped out, what he wanted to do, work with me, bring me the whole nine yards. So I flew to Atlanta to meet Eric Bischoff. And I flew down with Jimmy, and Eric Bischoff offered me, I think it was $700 a week to train at the power plant. I was blown away.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Now, Jimmy, I almost beat up in the parking lot at CNN Towers, because Jimmy goes, well, are you fucking kidding me? $700 a week for him? He's a fucking one-of-a-kind athlete? Yeah. You know what? Fucking call me when you're serious. We're out of here. And in the parking lot, I had Jimmy by the neck against the fucking minivan that we rented, almost like a minivan, like Get Shorty, because that's the only thing we got from the airport.
Yeah.
I said, $700 a week. Because I had no money, you know. And he goes, dude, trust me, you never take the first offer. Never. They'll call you. Nobody called. So I'm
Jimmy.
Like, fucking, I'm so fucking mad at him. I had a girlfriend in Chicago that was, her dad woke up overnight, like as a millionaire for some kind of computer thing. But she was a big fan of Disney, so she wanted to go to Disney for vacation. So anyway.
Sounds like a treat.
It was a treat. I had a sugar mama. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Oh my God, good for you.
She took care of me. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money.
Good.
I just stood there. And looked pretty, you know. Anyway.
With those long locks, hell yeah.
Those long locks, buddy. They were deadly back in the day. I flipped that over to one side like a big lion mane. Yeah, now it just hurts my neck when I do that. So we were in Orlando and Disney, and we went to Perkins there on International Boulevard because I wanted pie.
Oh, my God.
And
I hear that right now.
Fuck. Yeah, right?
I'll order something.
Like Perkins used to have the best French silk pie ever. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd ask me if I wanted a slice, and I was like, no, bring the pie, bitch. I don't need it all. So we're in there, and I guess WWE was in town filming at Universal, and WCW was in town filming at MGM, at Disney, because they used to do those little champions. And Jimmy Hart came in and saw me there at Perkins. And I didn't want to tell him, like, yeah, hey, my rich girlfriend took me a vacation at Disney. So I was like, yeah, I'm just out here doing some business, you know, completely bullshitting because I was actually super embarrassed and she was paying the bill as we were leaving because I sure as hell didn't have any money. And I was trying to tell, you know, like, yeah, I'm just out here doing some business, you know. And meanwhile, dying of embarrassment, you know, because we turned down the deal that Eric got after he got
$700 a week.
Yeah, you know, like I turned the deal down. So I'm really feeling like an asshole. So we go back to the hotel and Jimmy calls me at like 3 a.m. He goes, dude, what are you doing? I said, what the fuck you think I'm doing? I'm sleeping. He goes, I need you to get on a plane tomorrow and meet me in Atlanta. I said, what the fuck am I meeting in Atlanta for? They called. I told you they called. I told you. So I hopped on a plane and met him in Atlanta. And then they gave me a ridiculous deal, the train, place to live, and all that other shit.
So Jimmy hooked it up. Jimmy was right. I think you need to still cut Jimmy like a good 10%.
Well, you know, Jimmy was getting a hell of a cut back in the day, kind of like a Colonel Parker cut in the beginning. Like he, you know. I learned a lot there too, but you know, moving along, that's how it all started.
Crazy.
And then originally my whole thing was I was an opponent for Hogan.
Yeah.
You know, and if I did well, then, you know, they might consider doing something with me. And if not, you know, they let me go.
Here we are.
And after that match, and then here we are years later. So,
crazy.
Yeah.
What a wild story. Yeah. I mean, I did not know that, but yeah, I mean, just like looking on Wikipedia, I was like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah, I owe my career, and that's the whole thing. Because back then, no offense, but there wasn't performance tryouts or training schools. I mean, you know, it was like the mafia. You had to know somebody to vouch for you to keep you in.
Yeah.
And let alone come in the way I did. And you know, it's funny. It's the way I came in. I had so much heat when I came in.
Who did you have the most heat with?
Most everybody that never became a champion or never got a run as a top man. Just bitter people.
Yeah.
You know, every top guy that I met thought it was great and wanted to work with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But people that had never, their dreams for whatever reason didn't come to fruition, you know, just.
It was your fault. You got in their way.
Yeah. I stopped them from the big title push. Yeah. You know what I mean? Not the beer gut and the fucking cocaine habit they had. They were sorry. Yeah.
Oral Sessions is proud to be presented by FanDuel. You guys never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great! FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. Why do I play FanDuel? I play FanDuel because I'm new to the fantasy game. I kind of need somebody to hold my hand through the whole process. And the thing with the FanDuel Fantasy app is that it's so incredibly easy to use. Even a dumb dumb like me can make it work. And if you happen to be a fence sitter like yours truly, you guys can pick a new team every single game. You can switch it up. You can change your mind. It's all up to you. Ball is in your court. So FanDuel is offering new users a deposit match of up to 500 smackaroos when you make your first deposit. Just go to FanDuel.com/cowherd for more info. FanDuel.com/cowherd. FanDuel, more ways to win.
Who do you want to see come here? Who else do you think would be a great fit in this environment?
You know, honestly, you know, there's one guy that I miss all the time, but I don't know if he's ever going to wrestle again or not, but it's Mark Henry. I love him.
He's still got it.
Oh, he does, but, you know, Mark would be amazing here because of, you know, he's got an eye for finding talent.
Sure.
And that's the thing about Mark that a lot of people don't know because of, you know, the way his character's done on TV and all that. There's so much depth to that man.
Yeah.
He's a lot smarter than people know. He knows everyone under the sun, and he's got a Rolodex full of athletes that he's helped, you know, get better, train better, become wrestlers, get into colleges they want to go to, get tryouts for pro teams that they want to go to. I mean, he's just, he's unbelievable. His heart is so big, the way he gives to athletes and helps athletes and stuff. So for me personally, I'd love Mark here because then we could be like, you know, the two old men and the Muppets and sit up in the corner.
Waldorf and stuff.
That's us. That's me. That's me. That's Mark. And
that would be fantastic. Mark's really, it's his eye for talent is so incredible.
It's unreal. Like, if you went down the list of all the people that Mark has introduced to WWE and told Vince and Hunter, hey, you guys should pay attention to this person. And now, most of their entire main event roster is because of Mark.
Bianca comes through him or Booker?
I think Bianca came through Mark. I know
I think
that
she did too.
But I think I think she also did some stuff with Booker too.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know how that transpired.
Yeah.
But I know that there's like Braun came through Mark.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean?
Kind of thing. What's your music gonna be? Because your music is fucking iconic.
Well, that might be a while before I get in the ring because we're working on that now.
How can we have you come out without the will?
Well, I have some friends, some very, very famous. One of them is a very, very dear famous friend. He's a musician. Unfortunately, right now he's currently shooting a movie with J-Lo in the Dominican Republic, which is Lenny. So
I can't believe you're friends with Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah, he's my brother. Yeah.
What a guy.
Yeah, but I forget that he's Lenny Kravitz, the rock star, till I go see him play. Then I'm like, oh yeah, he's like a rock star.
So he's gonna maybe help out.
I think so. Yeah, he's getting an idea. Well, him and also Craig, his guitar player, so they're both good. The only thing is it's just trying to when somebody's that busy doing stuff, I don't want to be that, hey, can you do this favor for me, you know, because I've never been that dude. So
I felt like that trying to get you to sit down with me. Like, I'm so sorry, I know you're busy.
It's funny. It's I'll do anything in the world for my friends, but I hate asking my friends for stuff.
I hate it. It makes me like sweat.
It does me
it
too.
It fully makes me panic. Yeah. That's why I was like, no pressure. We need to do it now. We need to do it later. Whatever you want. Like, I hate having to do that. It makes me so uncomfortable.
Because I don't want to be that person.
No.
And we've all had those people in our lives that just. Yeah, can I get backstage passes? Can I get tickets to WrestleMania? Can I get it's like,
no,
I know, no, I had to put in ticket requests like 4 months ago. Like, stop, it's 2 days before the show. I'm not getting you backstage passes, you know, so you can run around and tell everybody I'm the one that let you in,
taking pictures, blowing shit up on the internet. No thanks,
Run up hugging Brock Lesnar. Hey,
don't do that,
Do that. That won't turn out well for you, I promise. You know, I watched him make 300 people flinch one time.
How?
We were in Australia. We came off the plane. In Australia, they can come right to the gate.
Okay.
You know? So we come right to the gate, and they had some little, like, club rope trying to keep everybody away. But, you know, it was pretty bad. And Brock comes out with his glasses on, you know, blonde hair, just mad at the fucking world because he's been traveling for 20 hours, you know? If you know Brock, he's one of the sweetest people you've ever met.
Yeah.
If he likes you.
Yes.
If he doesn't, keep on walking.
Yeah.
Just keep on walking because it's not going to end well for you. And I remember like pictures go off and all this stuff, and people are screaming. He snatched his glasses off and he looked at everybody like this, and like everybody like pulled their cameras down, and everybody there got scared because the way he took his glasses off. And he went like that, he winced, and 300 people went, they all gasped. I started laughing so hard, and he goes, I appreciate it if you pass before you take a picture. And he keeps walking, I'm laughing so hard, I've got tears in my eyes, because I just saw 300 people pee themselves.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
He tackled me in Gorilla one time, and I've never been so terrified in my life.
Right.
I came walking back to the curtain grill, and he was about to go do seg one. And he's down on the ground stretching. We make eye contact. And he's in like football stance stretching.
Right.
And just we make eye contact. He just fucking ran at me, lifted me up. I was like, whoa. Right. I like just to like see or like feel an athlete like that. Yeah. Like there was nothing I could do.
He's
there was man. Nothing I could do.
My favorite.
It was at his mercy. It was like, oh, shit.
I've been at his mercy. My favorite story for him is we had a thing one night where Heyman and I were talking trash on the ramp, and Brock was supposed to be out of the building, but he comes from the side, and he's supposed to climb the railing and come up the ramp, but he has a chair. And you know, the rule is, if a guy's chasing the chair, you run, or else if he gets close, he can hit you. Mm-hmm. It's a freebie. So all of a sudden, Brock comes from the side, and I'm tall enough so I can see him. He cuts through that crowd, like, in less than a second and a half. He goes about 4 feet above the railing, sideways. Like, sideways. Not like he had a scissor it, or jump over it. Like he went over
it. But he high jumped it.
Yeah, like, but had like 4 feet still to go. Landed, hit the ground, and was sprinting towards me. I went, oh, damn, he's an athlete. Oh, shit, he's coming for me.
We had to turn. Oh, I'm the target.
I'm the target. I had to turn around right up here. Yeah, I've laughed at him so hard so many times. He punched me in the ear one night.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
And,
I just checked for cauliflower ear, by the way.
No, no, no.
What is the status of your ears?
Yeah, he punched me in the ear, and I headbutted him really hard. He goes, what was that for? I said, you hit me in the ear, you dick. he laughed.
He's a misunderstood nice guy.
He gave me an F5 in Africa, in South Africa. And I think he was in Cape Town. In Cape Town, I had some bad food.
Oh, God. And
this is back when I had the leather pants. You know, thank God. I had the leather pants, the singlet. And I hit that mat. Just it came out.
You exploded.
Came out, and he's covering me. He goes, do shit. He's covering me. I said, yeah. He goes, do shit. You know what I mean? And then while I'm laying in the ring after the F5, he keeps stepping on my stomach like he's trying to make more come out. You know? I'm like, and I'm trying to sell his finish. I'm like, get the fuck away from me. So he had dumped Paul Heyman in the ring too, right? So the thing was, is that was the finish, and then I would usually get up, come to, pull Paul out, throw Paul over my shoulder, and carry Paul out. That was the end of the night for the heels. We were totally humiliated, you know. But this night, I was humiliated. So Paulie's laying there, and he goes, you got to carry me to the back? I'm like, no.
What do you mean? You're not going to carry me to the back?
I shit myself.
What?
I shit my pants.
I can't hear you. What?
I shit myself.
Oh. Okay. Are you all right?
Oh, my God. Just an emodium and a pair of pants.
Yeah, no problem. Thing. Yeah. So meanwhile, I'm the guy out the back of the arena with a hose hosing off my pants. Like, you know, like.
Thank God they were leather.
Yeah, I changed my gear after that.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah, but those leather pants never left Africa.
I don't think they're still left. There.
I think they were in the trash can in that arena, matter of fact.
Terrible.
Yeah. But that's Lesnar. I always laugh. I always tease him now because he's got the best backstage game since Hulk Hogan. Like when he walks backstage, like people get against the wall. They're terrified of him.
Yeah.
You know, and I just laugh.
Especially when he walks back unassuming in like cowboy boots and a cowboy hat. You're like, wait, what?
Well, yeah. And he walks right down the middle and like people duck in rooms and shit.
Yeah.
Like, but he's a good dude.
He is a good dude. He's always been so sweet to me. Yeah. I've always really liked
Rod. He's a good dude, but he just, and here's the thing, you know, and he's an example that I give to younger guys that are big guys, that are strong guys. I said, who's the most dangerous guy perceived in wrestling right now? It's Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. And what does Brock Lesnar do incredibly well for a big muscle up guy? Sells.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, he's a great seller. I don't think people give him enough credit.
No, they don't, because his intensity, his overwhelming offense, sometimes takes away from the fact that when Brock Lesnar sells, he sells his ass off.
Yes.
And he loves to sell when somebody brings it to him. But if they don't bring him to him, he's going to eat their lunch.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a great motivation for muscle guys, body guys that are working out, who think they have to work strong means don't sell. Look at something like Brock Lesnar, who sells, but one thing he's always doing, he's always moving forward.
Always. It's
funny. He doesn't do one move and look at the crowd. One move, look at the crowd, like a lot of people do that make mistakes. His eyes never leave his opponent.
It's always funny to me, like, just how, like, because, I mean, people can be very hot or cold on how they feel about Brock, whether he's on top or, you know, he's a part-time guy or whatever. Yeah, it's very controversial. But he's so fucking good at what he does that he can do whatever the hell he wants. I don't think I appreciated that as much until I was on commentary and being like, oh, I get it. Now you see things through a different lens.
Yeah. And I see things different because I work with him, because Brock's the one that actually turned my career around WWE.
Yeah.
Because for a long time, I had a lot of heat up here and, you know, a lot of shit and stuff like that. And, you know, Brock knew me. And they asked Brock, and said, well, who do you want to work? He says, I work with a giant. He says, you dumbasses don't know how good he is.
Time to show everybody.
You know, and then we had a stretcher match.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was off the run to me. My stars opened up and everybody realized that, oh my God, we can do something. You know?
It's so crazy to have somebody that, like, I mean, not that it's Brock taking a chance on you per
but somebody that vouches for you in the right front. Because here's the thing, I had a lot of negativity because I came from WCW. Mm-hmm. I was green as grass, so I made a lot of stupid ass mistakes in the beginning, you know, and it wasn't until, you know, once I got my shit together. And that's why I have a soft spot for a lot of talent that's struggling, because I've been there.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be your first time, it has to be the time.
No. It hits different for everyone, but sometimes just trying to really explain that it's not that complicated, because once it clicks, once it catches, once you understand who you are, this business is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah,
it's fun.
It's the best.
It's fun every night. You can pull those people, you can have them hate you.
Yeah.
You know, you can have, you know, O2 Arena one night chanting you fat wanker, and the other night chanting, you know, you still got it.
So, yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to join me here.
It's my honor to be here. I'm sure I probably get all kinds of heat for everything I've said. But
I don't think you said anything bad.
I'm going to blame my aunt. Look, she was pregnant and I had to do it, so.
Maybe. You can do that. Well, you got 3 more months to lean on that. And you might as well blame on something.
Well, you haven't really gotten uncomfortable yet.
I've got a pillow behind my back.
You got a pillow behind your back, but as you go along, you're gonna like pee every 20 seconds.
I'm peeing. I sneeze and pee my pants more than I care to admit. And if I drop something on the ground now, I really have to decide if I need it.
You kick it along to the floor to somewhere where you're sitting down.
I'm gonna do that or just go, I don't need it. I don't need it anymore. It's got to be really worth it. Well, it's fucking awesome to see you here. You look great. I'm so excited for this part of your career and this journey that you're on. And yeah, I just get to watch and be a fan of Paul motherfucking White.
There it is. Big G, baby. What's up?
All right, big time thank you to my buddy Paul White for hanging out with me. It was really nice to be able to do back to back this week. We had on Christian and Paul White, two interviews that I got to do in person. Obviously, it's been a very long time since we've been able to be in the same room as people, but I pointed out with Big Show, I believe I pointed out with Christian, we were all COVID tested. So everything is safe and taken care of. But just nice to be back in the room and to see some familiar faces and get to ask some questions about these new journeys that these guys are on. I'm so excited for them to be able to be in the driver's seat and really dictate how these final years of their careers are going to go. Could not be more excited. It's just very cool to see dudes that have been around for a while that just have so much love for the wrestling business and the wrestling industry that you can't keep them away. You can't keep these guys away. AEW is very lucky to welcome these two gentlemen from Christian and Paul White onto their roster, because they just have so much to offer, so many years under their belts, brilliant minds. So congratulations to everybody all around. All right. So at the beginning of the show, I talked about Magic Spoon. So just a little friendly reminder to you guys, go to magicspoon.com/Renee. You guys can grab the new limited edition cookies and cream, maple waffle, or a custom bundle of cereal that you guys can try today. Use our promo code Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at the checkout to save $5 off your order. This offer is good to go for anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, but only when you use our code at checkout. So don't forget to add Renee at the checkout. Don't miss out. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter, both at Renee Paquette. You can follow The Volume Network at The Volume Sports, both on Instagram and Twitter. Again, check out our YouTube channel. These videos are going up. You can see me and Paul White hanging out in my husband's trailer at the pay-per-view on very comfortable chairs that we both kept accidentally reclining. We were getting very comfortable with this interview. just search my name for YouTube, Renee Paquette. You can find it there. Subscribe, like, comment, all of those things that you do on the old YouTube. Thanks, guys. I will see you next week. We've got some more killer interviews lined up. I promise. Hell yeah. What a fun job this is. See you guys soon. Bye.